Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 68.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. It's so nice to be back and chatting with you, Kel. I was thinking about that this morning. I was like, yay, I get to speak to Kelly today, which is so exciting. I've been looking forward to it all week. And it's not that I don't love the podcast all the time, because I do, and it's great. But when we're kind of recording so often, it just becomes one more of those things that I have to do in the week. And I feel like it gets a bit box ticky sometimes. So it's really nice to really look forward to wanting to do it today, which is lovely.
Yeah. And there's some context around that. We've had a bit of a break. We took it was a 4-week break. Sorry about that, guys. It was meant to be a 3-week break, but I miscalculated, which kind of freaked me out because I don't miscalculate. But yeah, so we've had a month off and yeah, it's good. We're very refreshed and perky today.
I'm feeling super refreshed. And what have you been up to in your month off, Kel?
I've been finishing up with flying solo. So yeah, it's kind of like I don't even know what I've been doing, because it's like the last month wasn't crazy, but it was just full, and I just had to kind of tick through a lot of stuff that, you know, I kind of like one-off stuff like creating systems and processes and things like that. So yeah, and then it's just like kind of the second I've been finished up with flying solo for a week, and it's weird. I didn't like really make a big announcement or anything like that, other than that I moved on, but the work at Swish has just exploded. So I'm just like, whoa, okay. So no grace period then, hey?
Just straight into the next thing.
Which is great. And yeah, and also like we have my in-laws living with us because they're renovating, and Aunt turned 40 on Monday.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's just all been happening, but not as much as it's been happening for you, because you have been traveling.
I have been. I was in Indonesia traveling with World Vision. I'm one of their blogging ambassadors. And so I did a trip with them in 2011 to India, and I applied to go to this trip and got accepted, and it was amazing. We went to central Indonesia, like central north, in a place called Palu, which actually got affected really badly by earthquakes and floods shortly after we were there. So it's, I don't think there were many losses of lives, but there's lots of people whose livelihood have been quite severely affected by that. So got a project I'm working on for that at the moment, which is going to be super fun. I'm really excited. But yeah, it's always such an amazing experience traveling with them, because you just see like the real guts of a place, you know. You get to go and see, like, no one goes to Palu in Indonesia. There's no tourist industry. It's just a place where people just live and work and do normal things. Yeah. And it's amazing, because if you've ever been to Bali, you know that Bali is set up as a tourist place. You go there and there's resorts and, you know, Australians everywhere. Yeah. It's like, it's just another state of Australia. Yes. So going and going to these places where they don't often even see white people was just, it's just incredible. And just seeing the way that different people live, and I'm just very, very lucky to have that little insight into other people's lives. Also, just because I'm a sticky beak, I just really like seeing what other people do. I'm like, oh, so how do you get to school, and what do you have in your lunchbox, and, you know, what does your family look like? Oh, and I learned something interesting about Indonesian people in general. They often live with their parents kind of forever.
Yeah.
Like you'll get married and you'll just stay living with your parents. You sort of like family's own property that's passed down through generations. And traditionally a lot of people in this particular area will just stay living with their parents. And so our guide, his name's Stefan, he's lovely, just an absolute crack up. I was just like, yeah, we don't do that
in Australia. But you know, I sometimes honestly think we should, because I always think like when we have babies now these days, like I just remember being sent home from the hospital with Jaden when he was a baby, and Aunt and I just looking at each other going, like, do they know we have no idea what we're doing here? Like, and are you sending us home with this?
Shouldn't they give us some kind of a baby? Yeah.
It kind of seemed quite crazy to me, because we're not going home to where there are, you know, our elders are, who have been through this and teach us, you know, the things, you know, and help us and do all that stuff. Like, we're just going home and, yeah, just cope. And I don't really think, like, it's funny, I'm reading this book, Sapiens, at the moment, which is talking about, like, you know, how the Homo sapiens race evolved. And, you know, we're very tribal for a very, very long time. And
oh,
yeah. It's only in very, very recent times that we have evolved to where we are now, where we have these very, very tiny family units, and that, you know, and I think that's, you know, it's a story for another day, but I think a lot of the problems that we experience these days stem from that.
Well, in China, they traditionally have that thing where when they have babies, the grandparents take care of the children and the parents work. So that's kind of, that's sort of why you take care of your, you know, aging parents in China, and they live with you because they raise your children. So there's this whole like cycle of care, which I actually think is quite beautiful. It's really quite lovely. And it also makes a lot of sense because, you know, you go off and work kind of in your prime work years while grandparents take care of the kids. I can hear so many grandparents being like, nope, terrible idea, don't want to do that.
Well, no, I'm just laughing because aunt's parents are staying with us at the moment, and so they're getting to experience Mia, like aunt's dad's experienced Mia quite a bit because we live with him when she was a baby. But it's just funny because I can kind of see aunt's mum thinking like, I love you, but, you know, I've been there, done that. I'm not sure I need to do this again. Like with you know, the real young kids and their tiredness and their moods and their, and also poor aunt's mum is like Mia's number one. She's her go-to. So it's she fully cops it. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm thinking like we're in China, and when you know you didn't have to do the raising of your own kid, then maybe when you are a grandparent, you don't mind it.
Exactly. Yeah, and because it's been going on for so many generations,
it's just
there's no generation that had to do it twice. It's,
yes,
you just take care of the grandkids. But yeah, it's so interesting experiencing that kind of stuff and seeing the way that different people do things, and being in Indonesia and being like, wow, I would never live with my parents as an adult. So on with the show today. Today we're going to be talking about standing up for what you believe in without being a dick. This came up in the Facebook group, and I think it's a really interesting topic that needs discussing, and I would be very interested in hearing what our readers have to say about this particular topic. I think people are better educated than they've ever been before, and we've got broader access to different ideas, and it's a fact that exposure increases inclusiveness. So that's where the internet is awesome. I think the internet's done some really wonderful things just for marginalized people who might not have had a voice before and who were so invisible for so long, who are now able to put their faces out there and put their cause forward. And now people know about them. And the more you know about someone, the less you're going to behave like an idiot when you meet them in public and they're different to you, and the more you know before you meet people, the less you're going to be like, oh my God, look at that person, or I just heard this thing about that person. And yeah, so I actually think the internet is fantastic for that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it also gives people a chance to get up on their soapbox about things, and it also gives them a lot of access to a lot of false information on which they base their opinions. So, well, this is kind of like this is why anti-vaxxers exist now, because they can spread their message more easily, whereas before you sort of had to be living in an anti-vaxxer catchment area before you knew it was a thing, because I didn't realize, I kind of thought that anti-vaxxers were a modern thing. And my mum's a nurse, and she said they did exist 30 years ago, but she said they couldn't spread their messages easily.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it was, because my mum's a nurse, they basically all lived together, and they were often kind of in sort of, you know, hippie commune kind of areas. And she said they naturally didn't really socialize with other people anyway. So it was quite contained. But unfortunately, the internet now is reaching that very harmful message out to people who wouldn't necessarily have known about it. So the internet's sort of a catch-22 with, you know, things for standing up for what you believe in without being a dick and without creating too many issues.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because, as you say, it's a catch-22, because it's an amazing world that we live in that we all have a voice, but some people are able to amplify their voice and message, and it's not necessarily a good one. But then it also raises the question of, well, who gets to decide what's a good message and what's not? Like, so, you know, there are obvious things that are not great messages, but then there are the messages that like just don't sit well with me and my experience and how I believe the world should run, but who says I'm right? So It's a bit of a difficult one.
There are some things, though. I'm going to get in so much trouble with this episode. I'm just saying, like, already,
let's
guys,
let's get definitive,
I'm ready,
about what's a good message and what's not.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are some things that, I mean, you know, climate change, that actually just is a thing. You don't get to decide that's not a thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. Not kind of. I am with you on that one. It's kind of mind-blowing to me. Like, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of scientists in the world who say it's a thing, and then there's like 20 who say it's not, and people will use what the 20 are saying to go, yeah, you know, see what they said. They're a scientist and they disagree. I'm like, come on. The vast body of scientific evidence says climate change is a thing. The impact we're having on the world right now, we need to do something about it. Like, that's all they're saying. All they're saying is, we can do something about this. We've kind of done a fair bit of irreparable damage, but there is stuff we could be doing, and we're resisting doing it because, you know, for a lot of reasons. But it is, yeah, because it's too hard, and yeah, because it is a bit too hard because of capitalism. And then we use like the 20 people who say it's not a thing, and it's just what happens in the world. You know, every so often there is a climatic change. Yeah, that's true, but it happens over eons, not over hundreds of years, which is what's happening at the moment. So climate change is a thing, and that's, you know, and if you don't think that climate change is a thing and you morally object to us saying that, then this may not be the show for you.
Definitely not.
As with vaccination, I strongly, strongly believe in vaccination.
We are pro-vax.
Yeah, I just don't believe in taking chances with our kids' lives. I remember,
or other people's kids' lives,
yeah,
either.
I just remember coming home from hospital with two babies, and they can't be vaccinated till 6 weeks old, and just being terrified for that first 6 weeks of my kids coming into contact with somebody who had whooping cough or some other, you know, really quite life-threatening illness.
Have you seen that video of that poor little baby with whooping cough?
No,
that was going around?
Oh. I just can't. It kills me. No.
It was just
I'm
awful.
I'm far too aware of it. And it's just, yeah. So I kind of get the fear. But then the other thing that kind of gets me is that a lot of the anti-vaxxers, the thing they fear is autism. And that's another thing that really upsets me, because I'm like, you would rather your kid gets really, really sick and dies than gets autism. Like,
exactly.
Autism isn't a disease. It's, first of all, there's no link. Like, the guy who started that, it's been disproven. It's been proven that he actually just completely made that up. But second of all, like, autism's just a life challenge, like so many other life challenges that we all face.
Exactly. It's no different to kind of like anxiety or depression, or it's just a thing that happens sometimes.
And that we manage, like, and yeah, and it's still, you know, the person with autism is still a beautiful person. And yeah, so that's kind of something that really upsets me a lot as well. So yeah, so there are things that are just straight up wrong. But are we being dicks?
Because this is, I've got a thing about this, and there are very few things that I'm hardcore black and white on.
Yes.
So for instance, I am pro-vax, and I will fight that to the death because of all of the reasons we just said. But then there are things that pop up, like the legalization of prostitution, for instance. I'm not black and white on that, because there's no, I haven't actually been taken over the line in either direction on this, because I've read so many different arguments about it. I've seen so many different documentaries, and I think we need to listen to the sex workers themselves, who also have a voice in this. And I haven't been convinced in either direction, because there are so many different factors about this. So I think I'm really open to having discussions about that, and I would love to be convinced in either way. But there are some things when I have actually been given the facts and I can't argue with it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I just, I can't, like, you know, so like with the legalization of prostitution, it can be, you know, well, this is a livelihood for women. It gives them control over their own lives. But then it also encourages the notion that a woman can be bought, or that sex is something that can be purchased, which contributes to the like rape culture stuff, where men think that sex is something that they can earn and that they can have, which is a very problematic thing. But then, so it all gets really complicated. But when you've got the vaccine argument, you're like, there's really no alternative here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. That's right. I'm like you. I exist in the gray for the vast majority of things in this world. Like because I understand that most of life is gray, like, you know, and a lot of it comes down to the individual person. So for your example about legalizing prostitution, like there are people in the sex industry who it empowers them to be able to, so that's their job and that's their role. They have very strict boundaries. They have and as you say, it allows them to earn an income and be their own person. And then there are others who are susceptible to the darker sides of that industry. But then if you look at pretty much every industry, there's darker sides
of all.
You could say the same. So I understand that for the most part, the world is a very, very gray place. I understand that. And so like you, I'm not hard and strong on a lot of things in life. But yeah, there are the things that I am. And so I guess I'll talk about
we've each got tips to share on how to stand up for what you believe in without being a dick. Kelly, your first point.
So my first one is to know yourself. And so my problem is, like, as an INFJ, I'm like ridiculously idealistic. So this can be, like, so if there's something that I'm very, very passionate about and it's the kind of thing I get up on my soapbox about, like I get up on my soapbox and I have to be aware that it's very hard for people to take on a message if they're having to slowly back away from you. Because, because it's like one thing to be passionate, but it's another thing to know your audience and go, okay, these guys need a toned down version of my message here. Like, you know, so say feminism is a very thing I'm very big on at the moment. And I say want to educate my husband and my brother on feminism and, you know, and why things that they think are just part of everyday life is actually casual sexism. And I firmly believe that without the foundation of a casual sexism, the greater sexism that exists in the world can't exist. But they're like, you know, but they're, of course, their approach is like, oh my God, you can't pull us up on every single thing. And I'm like, yeah, but
I also have to.
I kind of have to, because, you know, you're the good guys. And if the good guys don't get this, like, what hope does the world have? But, you know, I have to pick my time and just tone my idealism down a little bit, because otherwise my message just isn't going to be heard.
Yeah.
So what's your first, Carls?
So my first is you need to present facts, not opinions. So, for example, one of the things I'm extremely black and white on is the fight for marriage equality. I don't think that there is such thing as two messages on that. There's only one message on that, and we just need marriage equality. I just don't believe that can be argued. But my shtick is to never go all emotional and be like, my gay best friends should be able to get married just like everyone else, because then the message just gets muddied and the point doesn't get across and people feel like they're being attacked.
Yes.
So I very calmly say that heterosexual marriages have no effect on anyone but the people in them, the same as homosexual marriages. And I actually had this argument last week with someone. I think it's extremely important for CEOs like Tim Cook to say that Apple is an equal opportunity and LGBTQ friendly company, because the marginalized LGBTQ community need to know that there are big guys on their side and that it's fully possible to become the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world without hiding your same-sex partner from your boss. I think that is such an incredible message. And last week, the person who I had this, it wasn't an argument, it was just someone I gently educated, was saying, this guy actually works for Qantas and was saying that he wasn't stoked that the CEO of Qantas came out and said that, you know, they're an equal opportunity employer and that they support gay marriage. And he said, because you shouldn't mix business and politics. And I was just like, it's not politics, it's human rights for a start.
Yes.
And secondly, and he said, oh, also, you know, because, you know, he works at Qantas and he works in cabin crews. So he's like, most of the people I work with are gay.
Yeah.
But he just kind of felt like everyone's so accepted and it's not an issue for them in the workplace. So why keep talking about it? And my point is, because we still don't have marriage equality, which is why we need to keep talking about it. And it is so important for big companies to say that kind of stuff, because I also like to put my money behind companies like that. And if I know of a company who is against that, so for instance, Gloria Jeans donated money to the Australian Christian Lobby, who are against marriage equality, and they actually approached me to do some work with them. I kept this quiet for a really long time, but they approached me to do some work with them because they had like a sugar-free mochaccino frappa something or other drink thing, which is right up my alley because I adore frozen beverages. But I couldn't work with them because they don't support marriage equality. And I think that's important. And I think that you need to put your voice behind people who, companies who don't support the ideals that you support. And I never said the company until this podcast. And I thought, no, I'm going to say it because I like to put my money behind companies that I believe in. And if that's something that is important to you, then you have the right to have that information.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I just think whenever people say, look, everyone's accepted already, like, why do we need to keep talking about this? I think you just need to look in the papers to see the messages that are coming through there. It's things like saying, you know, sexism doesn't exist. Like, women can do anything they want these days. And like, you know what? Yeah, women can for the most part. But then when a woman gets the CEO position of, like, you know, a massive company in Australia, and it says mother of four gets made CEO of, you know, like, right there and then, that's, you know, I think you'll mention this later, but the easy line in the sand is, would they say this about a man? Would they go father of four is made CEO? No, they wouldn't. So don't need to say it about women. Don't define a woman by her children. She's worked bloody hard to get into that role, probably 10 million times harder than any man, just quietly. Don't define her by her kids when she's just achieved like this massive level of professional
experience. Yeah, absolutely. And like the celebration of women juggling family and careers, the language around that really needs to stop, because men need to step up and be,
yes.
I mean, I've never heard of anyone talking about a CEO having a juggling family life and being a CEO at the same time. It's just like men being fathers is just not mentioned at all in any type of media or anything, and even in everyday conversation as well, even in boardrooms. It's just, and the first thing about women, and also if they look attractive as well, if they manage to look well rested and rock up to work. Has anyone seen the Facebook page? It's a crack up. It's called Man Who Has It All. And it's, they basically take memes aimed at women and replace all the words women with men instead, and it is so funny.
And you just get to see just how ridiculous it is, the things that I just said, and it's just a real mirror up to the world. So yeah, whenever anyone tries to say, look, we don't need to stand up for this thing because it's already been stood up for, like, come on, you know, you just have to look at the papers and see who's driving a conversation, and then see if it needs to not be stood up.
Yeah, and presenting facts, not opinions, is a really important way to do that, because calling someone a disgusting homophobe achieves nothing, as good as it sometimes feels. You can't say that. It's, present the facts. I also like to talk a lot about increased suicide rates of teenagers in LGBT communities, and how non-support for equality contributes so much to the loss of beautiful young lives. This is not a political discussion. It's a human rights discussion, and it's a very, very important one.
Yeah, I completely agree. So my second tip is to actively seek alternate opinions. And this is kind of more in like things like politics, because I find it so interesting in Australia, especially where there are like dyed in the wool. So in Australia, we have two major parties. We have the Liberals and we have Labor. And I find it interesting that there are just dyed in the wool Liberal supporters and dyed in the wool Labor supporters still.
Yeah.
Because the two parties fundamentally, even though they purport to have quite different policies and policy platforms, they both run the country in pretty much the same way. And so whenever an election comes up and people get very passionate about, I can't believe that you're a small business owner and you will vote for Labor, for Liberals. I'm a swinging voter. I go back and forth depending on who's the leader of the party and depending literally on what policies they've campaigned on.
I'm exactly the same.
So I get that comment from people that, like, you cannot be a small business owner and vote for the Liberals. And I'm like, I can and I will, because they're not actually – like, I'm a middle-class white Australian. These two parties, for the most part, no decision they make affects my lives. And so I quite actively I try to seek out quite balanced views on both sides of the coin as much as possible. And so, and this was the same when Trump won the election in America. Like, I died.
I'm still dying every day. I die. Coffee.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I was reeling. I was absolutely reeling for so, so many reasons. Like, yeah, when Hillary did not win. But you know what? I was like, I need to understand this, because I'm just like, because right now I just see this as a flat out, this is a sexism thing. Like, you, America, have held Hillary Clinton to a much higher standard than any man in the world, because she is up against someone that did basically everything they could do to lose an election, and you still saw fit to vote him in over her. And I saw it as very much a sexism thing. But then I went online and I read and I read and I read, and I did kind of come down at the kind of, you know, because a lot of people going, no, it's because she's part of the political elite, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it's because she's a woman. If it was Bill Clinton running, there was no way he would have lost. And I still kind of stand by that. But I did realize that, yeah, there was more to it than just straight out sexism, that, like, you know, there was a very disenfranchised large part of the American population who just went, you know what, fuck it. Like, we don't want her. We don't want him either, but we'll take him over her.
Yeah, and it seems like, and he also appealed to those disenfranchised people and aimed for them. And also he spoke in a language that they understood, because a lot of the time that's a huge problem in Western politics, is that often people use language that's quite divisive and people don't understand what they're talking about. And I include myself in that. Sometimes, you know, when a politician gets up and talks, I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, what are you even saying? And then when you get Trump getting up there going, make America great again, that's something everyone can understand.
And to be fair, that's what Obama did when he campaigned. Yeah, he campaigned in a very similar way. So, yeah, so I do think that an important part of being part of a conversation where you know, it's all well and good for me to stand up for Hillary and go, my God, I can't believe you guys didn't vote for her. It's another thing for me to just point the finger and go, you're just a bunch of sexist bastards. Like, what were you thinking? I was able to have a far more nuanced conversation about the topic after I did all my wider reading. So I think, yeah, it's hard because with, like, who do you read? Like, that's another topic. But I do think it's important to seek out in a judicious fashion the alternate opinions, just to make sure that, yeah, when you are part of the conversation, it's not just pure emotion that you're running on.
Yeah.
And as you said, like, you know, do try to go to the facts where and when possible. Facts are not always possible. In fact, seldom possible when it comes to politics. But try and seek them out where you can. So, yes, so your second tip, Carl?
My second one is know when you're fighting a losing battle. There's an amazing article recently published in the New York Times about how facts don't change people's minds. This was fascinating. I'll link to this in the show notes, or I'll wait until someone reminds me because I'll forget.
Or Kelly will link to them in the show notes.
Kelly will do it. So they did this amazing study where they had a group of people were given 25 assorted suicide notes. Some were real and some were fake. And they were asked if they could tell the difference. And some people got a score of like 24 out of 25, which showed an aptitude or a gift for figuring out which ones were real. And then some people scored much lower. So they got maybe, you know, 5 out of 25. So they weren't very good at picking the real suicide notes over the fake ones. It was then revealed that the scores that they got were fake. So the whole room was told that their scores were fake. And then when students were asked how well they thought they did, after being told that the last results they got were fake and they weren't given their actual results, the high achievers still thought that they achieved highly and the low achievers still thought they performed poorly, even though they were told that their last scores were fake. So it proves that once you are given information, it is really, really hard to relearn it, even though you've been told that it's false. So this brings me to my point, which is that once you've presented your arguments and you're seeing no movement, there's actually not much point in keeping on going. I mean, I try as hard as I possibly can to educate people and present facts about things that I believe in. But if it's someone who's completely stuck in their ways, and I mean, if someone, for instance, if someone has been raised in some sort of a fundamental religious way and they really can't accept the idea of marriage equality, that's upsetting to me and I don't love it, but I can't do much about that. I can't retrain an entire lifetime of belief and thought, and there's not really much point in me trying, so I might as well just back away and talk about something else.
I mean, this is like my dad. Like, my dad's 80. He was brought up, you know, in that world where it was these things were very, very black and white. Like, it's hilarious to me, hilarious and not hilarious, because he doesn't believe in gay marriage at all. Yet, like, right now he's quite happily in Barbados staying with my cousin and her partner, her gay partner, and completely accepting of that and has no dramas with it, yet can happily also say, yeah, but I don't believe in you guys getting married, despite seeing how happy you guys are together, and despite the fact that it changes my life in no appreciable way, I don't believe you should be able to, because the Bible says X.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, there's nothing that would, you know, short of God coming down from heaven and going, hey guys, it's all good. Just, yeah, go for it. You misinterpreted what I said in the Bible. Yeah, that's, it's just not going to change their minds. There's just no point revisiting that conversation over and over when they're just like, this is just how I think, and I cannot change 80 years of thinking like this. So,
and while it would be lovely to be able to get people to see how important marriage equality is, as long as they're not actively shunning their family members or stopping people from being happy, then I think that you need to have a little bit of wiggle room there. And I'm quite happy with that. And I've got older family members who are the same, who, you know, are very, very fine hanging out with gay couples and don't even really think that much about it, but are against gay marriage. And I'm like, you know what? We're halfway there. Just don't talk about it and don't say it in front of them and we're all good.
Yeah, that's right. So my third tip for standing up for what you believe in without being a dick is to always play the ball and not the man. And I mean, if you've been in any internet conversation, like on Facebook or in a forum or whatever, and you know, it's very rare that this happens, but every so often there's a conversation where people are just like, oh, it's interesting that you say that, but I disagree because of this, this and this, rather than going, the fact that you said that proves that you're a complete dick and, you know, a blah, blah, blah. And then it just goes straight into a personal attack on the person. And as soon as anything descends to a personal attack, game over. Like, there is no potential anywhere for any kind of learning. Yeah, so those conversations that I've like been part of or read through where people have been quite measured and gone, yeah, well, you know, that might be your opinion, but I disagree for this reason. Like, I have learned so much from those conversations, because as I said, like, the world is great. Like, there, it's so, so nuanced, this world that we live in, and we cannot appreciate the nuances unless we are able to take the personal attacks out of these conversations and literally play the opinion and not the person. And I think your tip is something along the same lines.
Yeah, absolutely. My third tip is keep it clean. So just never resort to name calling, and also never assume that people know what you know. So for example, a few years ago, one of my causes is also organ donation. I think it's a tragedy in our country that we don't have the opt-out system because a lot of people aren't registered to be organ donors, not because they don't want to, but because they haven't got round to filling out the form, which I think it should be the opposite. If you don't want to be an organ donator, you should fill out the form. And then this stops poor families from having to make horrific decisions in times of grief. You know, hey, can I take your 19-year-old son's heart? You know, he's about to die, but can I have it? Like, no, we don't have this conversation in this time of crisis. It's taken out of people's hands and it just makes so much sense. So I had everything ticked on my form except for my eyes, because it kind of creeped me out, the thought of people cutting out my eyes. And it's a whole thing. Like, a lot of organ donors don't have their eyes ticked. And I've got a friend who was legally blind until he was 30 because he was waiting for a cornea transplant. And because no one ticks their eyes, he was legally blind until he was 30. So, and that broke my heart because he's a writer. And I just couldn't believe how selfish I was being. And so I changed it. And now I'm like, take everything, take anything you want. I need none of it. And I've taken that decision out of my mother's hands. I've taken it out of my partner's hands. Everything is to be used and immediately. And you don't waste a second. You take what you need and you save a life with it. And when I hear of people who don't have their eyes ticked or who aren't organ donors, I'm not angry at people who haven't filled out the form, because I think that's the government's responsibility, because not enough people know about it. So if you haven't registered as an organ donor, that's not my issue. I'm not angry, but people don't deserve my anger about that. They deserve my story about my friend. And then maybe they'll change their mind and make their whole body available for organ donation, and also rally to have the opt-out system so that we don't have this colossal mess every time organ donation becomes a thing, because it's already such a horrific experience for everyone involved. Can we just do this one thing to make it easier?
Yeah, I completely agree. And actually, so this kind of feeds nicely into my fourth tip, which is that actions always speak louder than words. So often you don't need to say anything. You just need to be the example, and you just need to do the things, you know. So things like believing in the environment and wanting people to stop using takeaway coffee cups. So be the person that always has a keep cup in their bag. So I'm always quite inspired when I like go somewhere with my friend Alex Stewart, because she always has like, and you do as well now,
yeah,
a little container and her little keep cup. And like I see her doing it, and seeing her doing it just plants the seed in my head that, hey, Kelly, you should do that too. She's not saying anything to me. She's not looking at me askance when I stand there with my takeaway coffee cup. But things, you know, and things like straws as well, like she will always take the straw out of the cup, you know, when, you know, or say to the waiter at a, you know, a bar or a restaurant, hold the straw.
And no, I'm like, straw.
Yeah, of course, hold the straw. Even though I really do like drinking out of straws, I don't know that is.
I'm not into straws at all. In the whole no waste community, we were talking about this in the Facebook group the other day. There's a whole, in the no waste community, people have their own like aluminium straws and stuff. And
I'm
like, just use your mouth. Like straws, people are so obsessed with replacing straws with, you know, environmentally friendly options. I'm like, they didn't need to exist in the first place.
I know. I don't know what it is about them, but I just.
Use the hole in your face.
I know. I really like drinking out of a straw. I don't know what it is. I need to get an aluminium one, or when I'm at, you know, but if I'm at a bar and they try to give me a straw, I do kind of tell them to hold it. And it's just, yeah. So it's more like I'm not going, you know, turning to my friend when I'm at the bar and going, now, just so that you know, straws, you know, don't break down and they cause this much waste and that, and that's the reason why I'm not taking it. I just say, hold the straw. My, you know, friends see you doing that and they kind of go, think to themselves, yeah, why am I getting a straw? Or, you know, it starts a conversation. So I just think, yeah, it's important to keep in mind that more often than not, actions do speak louder than words, and actions start a conversation because the person is curious. And then if a person is coming to you from a place of curiosity, the conversation is such, they're so much more open to what you're going to tell them, rather than you just going, you know, everybody should be doing this. And, you know, they'll be, you know, there's, the reasons are good, but if people are coming to you rather than you going to them, the message is going to be accepted a lot more easily.
Yeah, I'm also completely overthinking what I said about organ donation. I need to go back and reiterate, I don't think that everyone should be forced to be organ donors. And if you choose not to be, I'm completely okay with that, because it's your body, your rights. I can't be pro-abortion rights, but also think that people who refuse to donate their organs are dickheads. I don't believe that at all. I believe everyone has the right to do what they want with their own body. It's the government policies around organ donation that I don't like.
Yeah, agreed.
Wanted to make that clear. Because it's a very personal choice, and I for years was not going to donate my eyes. So if you're not into organ donation, that is a completely valid choice. I'm not black and white about that. Just wanted to, before people were going and going, I don't want them to cut up my body. That's totally fine, because it's a really creepy thought and I get it. So just throwing that one out there. So my fourth point is be confident. So this is what I'm going to get slammed for, but I am very confident about this and I'm going forward because this is a thing I need to talk about. I have a battle at the moment that is bothering me a lot, and this is when modern women take their husband's name when they get married. A little piece of me dies inside whenever I'm at a wedding and they announce the bride's new name and she's changed her name. And I couldn't quite understand why this bothered me so much, because I'm very into people being able to have autonomy over their own lives and choose their own paths and have that freedom. And I always thought, well, you know, feminism is about choice and their choice doesn't affect me. But then Clementine Ford wrote this extraordinary article that just cleared up my thoughts and made them super clear in this article that we'll link to. It's called Giving Up Your Name When You Get Married Is a Choice Worth Questioning. So as you can imagine, this is an incredibly unpopular opinion, but I do need to talk about it because I need to empower women who might not know that they do have the choice and they might not have the words to support their decision in keeping their own name when they're experiencing pressure to change it. And this is not about demonizing women who have already changed their name or are about to do so, but it's just about digging really deep into the reasons why women are doing it in this day and age and trying as hard as you can to find any not completely misogynistic reason for doing it. And hint, there actually isn't one.
So, I've got one. The only really? This is an interesting one because I changed my name and this is going back nearly 12 years ago. So it was long before I had kind of really understood feminism and understood a lot of the principles that sit behind it, much as got fully on the bandwagon myself. So I was thinking to myself, if like, you know, today I was getting married, would I change my name? And I probably wouldn't because a lot of my identity, my professional identity would be tied up in my name, whereas it wasn't 12 years ago. But then I would have a different name to my kids unless we hyphenated their names, and that would really bother me. I would hate having a different name to my kids. So that would be the main driver for me.
But then this is where we need to switch it and have men taking the female's name just to even the playing field for a while.
Yeah.
Or create a family name, a new family name that all four of you take on that doesn't belong to either one of you.
I know. There's so much identity caught up in names, isn't there?
that's the huge problem. And I was very on the side of choice and I'm like, feminism is about choice, but I actually – because I used to argue against this argument and then I just got slammed one day and I was like, wow, I have to change my stance on this because there's no way to argue the logic of doing this. And I do think it's holding women back by building
attaching
families
them to their partner.
To their partner's name, where the male does it. And every time I say this, someone will be like, oh, I know a man who changed his name to a woman's name. I'm like, well, I've never met anyone who's done that. I've heard about these mythical creatures that do that and it's fantastic. But I think that there does need to be a better solution to this problem. And I do think that as a whole, it is detrimental to feminism. And I have not come across a single feminist reason to do it.
Yeah, I will have to read Clementine's article. I'm pretty sure I've read everything she's ever written.
It's amazing.
But I'll have a read of it and see if it changes my mind.
It also comes back to the Caitlin Moran misogyny test, which is my favorite thing ever. If you are ever looking at a situation and wondering whether or not it's misogynistic bullshit, all you have to do is ask, are the boys doing it? And if the answer is no, it's misogynistic bullshit. So is it misogynistic bullshit that women change their names when they get married? Are the boys doing it? No, it's misogynistic bullshit. See how it's flawless. It's flawless. And I'm going to get so slammed for that. And I'm very, very sorry, but it's a thing that needs to be discussed. And I actually think as a whole, it's holding women back.
Yeah, well, we'll share that. We'll share Clementine's article in the Facebook group and we'll get everyone's thoughts on it and, yeah, hear from the name changes and the non-name changes and see where we land.
Yeah.
So my final thought on this topic is to be brave, because here's something I see a lot in the internet world is there is a lot of pack mentality, okay?
Oh, so people with their pitchforks.
Yeah, so, you know, there's somebody who is, you know, a very popular person and they say, oh, my God, I can't believe this thing happened. And then all their followers, like, jump in a little bit sheep-like and go, oh, my God, yeah, this is the worst thing ever, da-da-da-da-da. And then, you know, I might read that and go, oh, I just think that that's a bit, you know, I think that's a bit extreme, or I don't think they're quite getting, you know, this is a bit of an overreaction. I'm just going to move on. And I think in situations like that, don't move on. Be brave. You don't have to get in there and go, oh, my God, you guys are all a bunch of dicks. I can't believe you're reacting like this. But I do think that if just one person joins in the conversation and goes, oh, look, guys, I think I can kind of see where this other person's coming from. I don't think they're right or wrong, but I can kind of see why, or I can kind of see the situation that may have led to them behaving in this way. And then when you have that bravery to step in and go, wow, like this is just a giant pile on and maybe let's just have a little bit of balance to it. You empower other people who have thought the same thing but were like, whoa, I am not getting involved in that conversation because people are just going to slam me. You give them the ability to go, oh, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with this person who's just said, look, a little bit of balance needs to be brought here. So I do think it's hard. especially for like, I'm a very conflict diverse person. So I'm like weird because I'm very, very conflict diverse, but I'm also like very idealistic and can't stand unfairness. So it's kind of like, oh my God, something really unfair is happening. I have to say something. Oh no, I don't want to get involved in a conflict situation and have people mad at me. And then I have to kind of deal with that. But more often than not, I will land on the side of, look, all I can do, again, don't make it personal, stick to the facts and just go in and go, look, guys, I just think this, this, and this, and just present a slightly more alternative view. It's not a negative view or a you're all a bunch of idiots view. It's just a have you thought that it might be because of this? And it just, yeah, allows other people to get in and go, yeah, actually, I agree with her and this, this, and this. Here's my experience of the situation. So you being brave empowers other people to be brave. And, you know, as long as you hold your own behavior at a high standard, you can hold your head up. Like people can have a go at you and you can go, well, hang on, you're having a go at me personally. You're not actually having a go at the opinion I just expressed. So, okay,
let's exactly, move on. Yeah. My final one on how to stand up for what you believe in without being a dick is that sometimes maybe you need to be a dick. So, for instance, I would straight up not allow my children to hang out with anti-vaxxers kids because I would not want to put my child in danger. And if people are going to make choices that are dangerous and endanger myself and my community, then I will be a dick and I will stand up for what I believe in by getting my kids as far away from them as possible. So yeah, I do think sometimes you just need to straight up just
take the hard line approach.
Yeah. Take the hard line approach. And again, I don't take the hard line on a lot of things. I've pretty much listed everything I take a hard line on in this episode, and I'm gonna get so slammed for this. It's gonna be
not by our listeners. Our listeners are very open-minded. And I have to say, like, we had this a little bit off topic but sort of on topic is the fact that, like, our most recent episode before this one, the one that finished up our last season, where you spoke about like your frustration with the fact that you eat so perfectly and exercise so well and you know, you can't lose that weight. And, you know, and there are people coming into the group making suggestions and going, have you tried this? Have you tried this? And one of the people commented and said, and you just took everybody's suggestions and thoughts in exactly the spirit that it was intended, because it would have been easy for you to go, guys, I have tried everything. Did I say I've tried everything? I've tried everything. And one of the people actually commented and said, like, good on you, Carly, for like literally taking all of these things in the spirit they're intended. And I just think that that's just what the group is. Everyone in the group, I don't think anyone's going to slam you. I think we're going to have some really open and honest conversations about the things we've raised today.
Which is great, because that's the intention. This is not, I'm not trying to demonize people. And with my hard line, I'm not taking a hard line on the people who are the opposite of that. It's the concept that I take a hard line on.
Yeah, for sure. So that's it. You know, come in the group, have a chat with us about the things that we've shared today. We will share some of the articles that we've mentioned. And yeah, we just really look forward to continuing the discussion in the usual dignified and open-minded manner that the group supports. Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com. We also have an incredible Facebook group full of fellow self-improvement junkies. So if that's you too, come join us at facebook.com/groups/straightandcurly.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.